The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939.
One day after a $30 billion Lifeline boosted its beleaguered shares, First Republic Bank saw its stock price plummet more than 25% on Friday, with trading temporarily halted, as new information about the bank's finances reignited investors' fears of a broader banking crisis.
UBS is in discussions to take over all or part of Credit Suisse, with the boards of Switzerland's two biggest lenders set to meet separately over the weekend. And as the FT writes, this would potentially be Europe's most historic banking combination if a deal were to come through since the financial crisis.
I think one of the challenges that the world has, this is not just a U.S. issue, is that for 10 plus years, interest rates have been very benign, inflation benign, volatility benign, and people have gotten comfortable with that. And so they've invested more money than they probably would historically into private equity, into private credit, in places in which they don't have liquidity. And now that interest rates are much, much higher on the front end, that cost of that liquidity is actually significant. And what we're seeing is a disintermediation of cash moving to where you can get 5% in short rates, whereas before you were getting zero. So yes, it's happening in the banking system. It's happening any place that has actually benefited from very low rates and low volatility. It's happening in the insurance business, where actually people who have insurance policies are saying, well, if I terminate my insurance policy and buy a new one, or actually buy a public security like a bond, I might get a better return. So we're going to see this continue to roll through the economic environment, and it's not over yet, and it's going to continue.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Well, stocks plummeted on Friday as the nation's banks veer towards a financial crisis, with over $2 trillion in losses in their bond portfolios. In just a week, the Fed's balance sheet has expanded by over $300 billion, and banks tapped the Fed's discount window for cash to the tune of $160 billion, far exceeding the amounts drawn out during the great financial crisis. Today's sell-off was sparked by First Republic cutting its dividend, which sent the stock plunging 25%. Other bank stocks are plunging, with bank stock ETFs losing 33% in just the last few days alone. All of this is raising questions concerning the FOMC meeting next week. The market is still pricing in another quarter-point rate hike. Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to a special edition of the News Hour. Today's program will be separated into a second hour as I discuss the perfect financial storm, inflation, Fed rate hikes, and resource scarcity in today's two-hour special. My technician this week is Bruce Frazier from Stock Charts. Bruce sees a worsening economy in the second half of the year and a strong base building for gold, with gold prices on Friday touching 2,000 for the first time since March of last year. Precious metal stocks soared on Friday in a flight to safety as the nation's banking system remains in a perilous state. Later on in the program, Daniel DiMartino Booth joins me as we look at the debt ceiling crisis that lies directly ahead as the nation's debt burden skyrockets. But first, let's find out the events moving the markets this week with Ryan Poplava.
Banks, backstops, and bailouts were the topics this week in finance as banking worries continued this week from the last. Despite the volatility we had in rates, bank stock prices, and news surrounding banks, I thought overall the equity market held up pretty well. The week kicked off this Sunday as the Federal Reserve, Treasury, and FDIC assured all depositors at Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank of New York they would have access to their deposits despite these banks being shuttered by regulators. In addition, the Fed introduced the Bank Term Funding Program, BTFP for short, that would allow banks to offer their treasury and other government securities to the Fed, valued at par, for collateral. These measures only encourage investors' fear on Monday that problems might be bigger than anticipated. Stocks and interest rates fell while government bonds and gold rose. The following day, First Republic Bank was put on a negative credit watch by Standard & Poor's, citing its funding profile, which followed news that Moody's had downgraded the U.S. banking system to negative from stable. Both measures helped to curb a rally that had begun from oversold conditions on Tuesday. In addition to that news, CNN reported that a U.S. Air Force drone was forced down by a Russian fighter jet over the Black Sea. That didn't help either. Banking issues continued Wednesday as Credit Suisse's largest shareholder, Saudi National Bank, said it could not provide funding assistance because of regulatory constraints. However, the Swiss National Bank came to the rescue saying Credit Suisse meets the capital and liquidity requirements imposed on systemically important banks. The following day, Credit Suisse announced a $50 billion loan from the Swiss National Bank. Thursday, First Republic Bank, PacWest Bancorp, and Western Alliance Bancorp had a volatile trading day as investors sold off shares. But a Wall Street Journal article reported that several large banks were talking about infusing First Republic Bank with funding and Treasury Secretary Yellen before the Senate Finance Committee said Americans can feel confident that their deposits will be there when they need them. When all was said and done this week, it was said 11 banks, including JP Morgan, had collectively made a $30 billion worth of deposits into First Republic Bank, which helped rally the shares late in the week. But the stock continued to fall Friday with the announcement it would cut its dividend and that it was borrowing from the Federal Reserve from March 10th to 15th from $20 billion to $109 billion. That news, in addition to the news that banks borrowed overall around $11.9 billion from the new Fed loan program, the BTFP, and another $153 billion from Fed's discount window as of March 15th, hit investors on a sour note. Bank worries were at the center of attention, but the issue didn't drive panic as a rotation was seen with movement into mega-cap stocks. The Vanguard Mega-Cap Growth ETF rose 5.7% this week, while Google, Nvidia, and Microsoft all rose more than 12% for the week. This helped communication services sector rise 6.9%, information tech up 5.7%, and consumer discretionary up 2.4%. Defensive sectors also did well, with healthcare up 1.3%, staples up the same, and utilities up 3.9%. As I mentioned earlier, volatility was seen in other areas, rates especially. In addition to the flight to safety found in the dollar, government bonds, and gold, terrible economic reports this week helped to drive down rates. This week, the two-year Treasury yield fell 77 basis points to 3.82%, while the 10-year note fell 30 basis points to 3.4%. Regardless of the market actions this week, the European Central Bank raised rates 50 basis points, saying inflation is projected to remain too high for too long. Gold rose $106 this week to $1,973.50, and silver rose as well, almost $2 to $22.46. To summarize some of the key economic news, as I mentioned, that was not good. The March Empire State Manufacturing reading came in at a negative 24.6, down from a negative 5.8 previously. The Philadelphia Fed Index stayed negative at negative 23.2, up slightly. The producer prices contracted slightly, down 0.1% for the month, while the Consumer Price Index came in at a year-over-year increase of 6% versus 6.4 in January. While on the right path, it's still likely high enough to warrant the Fed raising a quarter point next week. Retail sales were down 0.4% and the leading economic indicators fell 0.3% in February. Next week, all eyes will be on the Federal Reserve meeting with an announcement set for Wednesday with the usual Powell press conference and the addition of the officials' economic and rate projections, which Powell said last week would show higher estimates for rates than it did in December. It also seems that bank concerns aren't over with, as the news continue to flow daily. What's interesting is that these kinds of problems start to normally appear 18 months to 24 months after the Fed raises interest rates. Will the Fed choose financial stability over inflation? Hard to say, but that's clearly what the ECB didn't choose this week. That wraps up the week with bank news at the forefront, a rotation to mega cap growth stocks, and weak economic news. Up next, Bruce Fraser, this week's guest technician.
We're sort of starting to see cracks emerge in the financial sector as a result of this incredible increase in interest rates that the Fed has engineered. And I think there's in the banking world, but outside of the banking world too, there's all sorts of businesses, business models that have either consciously or unconsciously become very dependent on very low interest rates. And as you take those away, well, then things start to break. So if a low interest rate and the ability to borrow money at zero or next to zero is a very important part of your business strategy, then when that gets taken away from you, things start to unravel quite quickly. But I think banks around the world, more generally, I think they're sort of facing the same pressures and the same stresses.
To listen to this full interview, in addition to gaining access to all of our premium content airing during the week, go to financialsense.com and hit the subscribe button.
At a time, bank deposits offer very low interest and could be at risk. Corporate cash accounts are also progressively losing ground to inflation. At Financial Sense Wealth Management, we offer a solution to this problem. Our firm specializes in assisting companies by managing cash balances with short-term treasuries and high-quality corporate bonds that may provide higher interest rates. This approach not only helps to manage your corporate cash balances with competitive yields, but also to help reduce taxes through the use of treasury securities, which are exempt from state and local income taxes. Give us a call today at 888-486-3939 to find out how we can assist you to earn higher interest rates with no bank risk and no state and local income taxes. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
There's a saying on Wall Street, the Fed will keep raising interest rates until something breaks. The real question that we have to answer today, is this it? Well, let's find out. Joining us from Stock Charts is Bruce Fraser. Bruce, let's take it from the top. As you look at the charts and at the markets, what are the charts telling you? Is this it?
Well, I believe the case can be made for the bond market has started its bull market cycle in the fourth quarter of 2022, and that the lows were put in then. We've started a rally somewhat imperceptibly, but bonds actually were rallying even as the Fed was persistently raising interest rates tighter and tighter in their attempt to fight the inflation trends. But I think that there's a lot of signs, and this is kind of the normal sequence in a business cycle, and the Fed will tighten and keep tightening well into a slowdown in the economy, which I believe that we're in. So I'm making the case that we have a new bull market for bonds. We're still in a bear market for stocks, but could be late in that bear market. And we're now in a bear market for commodities, which are a reflection of the inflation cycle.
So when we look at some of the sectors within the S&P, staples have held up well. Consumer discretionary looks like it's trying to rally. As you look at the various sectors, what would corroborate this thesis?
Well, I do think that staples, which are very defensive, those would be the early leadership type themes. But what's really interesting now, Jim, is that all of a sudden, the stocks and the themes that are coming into leadership are some of the mega cap growth names that we saw leading in the last bull market cycle, which is fascinating. So we're seeing stocks like Amazon and Microsoft and Google and Meta and AMD and others that all of a sudden are look like they're completing potential accumulation structures and starting to lead the way up here. So the other group that I think looks pretty attractive as a sector theme is the utility sector. I think it's attempting to complete a base and trying to turn up. And of course, that's very interest rate sensitive and benefits from a bull market in bonds.
Yeah, because we look at it's approaching, it looks like it's 200-day moving average. And if it gets up there and breaks through, are we on to a new bull market in utilities?
I think we are. We have a couple more points to go in the XLU to get up to that level. But you can see that we've been really largely range bound in these utility stocks as a theme since June of 2 years ago. And so to get back up to the levels of the prior highs, which are about 10 points away from here, would be, I think, a really, really interesting move. And these stocks have dividends and are interest rate sensitive. So I really like this theme. Among and the others like the staples and some of the really early blue chip type themes, but also what really interests me is the fact that some of these large cap names are acting, large cap growth names are acting well too. So this is all, I think, constructive. And I do believe sort of the, what happens in the business cycle is that we call it the six stages of business activity. And so the first stage of a new cycle heading into recession, into a contraction in the economy, typically in stage one, is when the bond market starts to go into a new bull market. And that's because the slowing economy actually reduces demand for borrowed money. And the Fed becomes sufficiently concerned, and the Treasury, for the how slow the economy is. And so they stop their tightening posture and become more accommodative. And so that initially benefits bonds the most. And we're really starting to see that happen. Then the second thing that happens some number of months later is that the stock market will catch its low and will start to turn up. But the interesting part that's so difficult for people to really grasp is the stock market typically will finish its base, its accumulation, in the very depths of recession. So I really think that the economy is going to continue to get worse into the second half of the year. And that could very well coincide with an important buying opportunity in the stock market. And it's even possible that the stock market made its final lows in the October and December periods, and that it's just sort of, you know, bouncing along until the worst of the recession is over. And I think this will be a very mild recession.
You know, it's interesting. I want to get back to your bond theme, because up until the middle of last week, I mean, I couldn't believe a week ago we were buying treasuries at 5.25%. Like, we were buying 1-year treasuries, we were buying 6-month treasuries over 5%. You look at where they are today. It's like, was it basically, Bruce, the shorts? I know there was an overwhelming short position against the bond market. But when you see such a rapid move, I mean, when you see a treasury going from 5.25 to 4.5 in 5 or 6 days, I mean, that is huge.
Well, and just because I knew we were going to have this talk, Jim, I actually did some point figure analysis, some objective, calculating the potential objectives for how far interest rates could go down off of the peaks that we recently made. And you're absolutely right. The first part of a move will typically be short covering. And so short covering is the kickoff to a good trend change. And so I'm actually going to put these charts up on my power charting video episode that I do on Fridays at stockcharts.com. It's absolutely free. And so I will put these up, but let me just give you the bottom line, which is what's really important. And that is that the 10-year treasury made a high on my chart of around 4.275%. I know it's a little higher than that. I'm looking at a point and figure chart. And I have an objective range for how far these interest rates could fall on the 10-year that goes down to 2.25% down to 2%. So that's how much they could fall. And currently, as of today, the yield is about 3.45. So it could take a while to get to those levels. But I believe that we are now seeing interest rates trending down, which will cause bond prices to go up, as people know. And so that, to me, is a very important objective potential for how far rates could fall.
Well, now let's go to other sections of the market. Let's talk about the oil markets and the gold market.
So in the case of oil, I also did some chart analysis on oil. So the thing about oil is that I actually have it going down to, and this here, this is all part of what happens when you get into a recession or an economic slowdown, is that you start to have commodities. Commodities are the last bull market. So bonds will top out first, then stocks will top out, and then finally third, commodities will top out. Well, commodities have topped out, and have been in a downtrend now for a while. And so the objective that I have still for crude oil is, and we're getting very close, I've got an objective that goes down to $69, which we just achieved. We're around 67, 68 now. And then I have a larger swing trading objective of 58 to 60. So I think that the top is in, that crude oil has been dropping for a while now, and since 2022, and that we still have further down to go.
And then let's talk about gold, because Bruce, you know, one of the things that gold is a safe haven. You have a financial crisis, a bank goes under, it's the safety trade. But we also have been in this high inflationary environment that we haven't seen in four decades. And the only thing gold has done is sort of gone sideways.
Yeah, gold had such a great run earlier on. I think that gold sort of has a mind of its own, in that I think that it really is a function, as much a function of being a currency alternative as it is being an inflation hedge. And so typically when you get recessions, even gold can do well, even when the economy is slowing. And so if they're so for instance, Credit Suisse is another big Swiss bank that has gotten into trouble. So we've had a number of banks get into trouble, and it's not just on our shores. And so this actually puts into question deposits and bank deposits and whether or not they're safe. And that automatically produces a flight to quality. And gold is considered to be an alternative currency that is not somebody else's liability. And so gold, I do think, has the potential to, and it's attempting to complete a base, complete an accumulation. And so I do think that gold has the potential in 2023 to catch a bid and go higher. So I really think that it has a mind of its own and is not just purely an inflation play.
So given this kind of environment where you think this is the beginning of another bull market run in bonds, as an investor, Bruce, what do you do here?
Well, one thing that I've been advising, I get a lot of phone calls, talk to a lot of people, and I've been telling them to extend their maturities. And so I think it makes a lot of sense to go right into the treasury market and buy bonds and go out, extend your maturities a little further than you normally would. A lot of people have been staying very short term because the yields have been quite high. But it really does make sense, even if there's an inverted yield curve, to take a little lower yield, but take it for longer. And so if you're normally going to buy a one-year treasury, that's your time horizon, and you think that you can hold out for 2 or 3 or 4 years, extend maturities, maybe ladder them out, and do own the bonds directly. Don't own funds, because the funds will actually reduce the potential that you would have for appreciation in those bonds. The other thing that bondholders can do, but this is a little hard to do, buy, now treasuries typically don't have this problem, but if you like to buy corporates, try to buy corporate bonds, high quality, not low quality, high quality. And if you can, buy them at a discount, because that gives you some additional protection from them being called away. So just, and like I said, you don't have to extend maturities very far. Just go out a few years. And I think that that would make sense over, because the inverted yield curve, Jim, as we know, has the effect of causing people to stay very short term with their investments, because the yields are higher. The shorter the term, the higher the yield. And so when you get into a new bull market, you want to have lock in some yield. And so maybe do some combination of all of the above.
So, Bruce, as we close, you mentioned something. You're going to be posting a video on stock charts. Tell our listeners how they can find that. And this is, as I understand, this is free. You don't have to pay to see this.
No, no, it's not behind the paywall. You go to stockcharts.com. At the top of the page, you'll see a Stock Charts TV, and just go right in there. And my show is called Power Charting. It comes out initially on Fridays, midday, and then thereafter it's available on demand. And so you could watch it at StockCharts YouTube channel, or just watch it right inside of the StockCharts website. And definitely, it's absolutely free, and I do it most every week. And I'm going to cover this content because, Jim, you inspired me to do it. So it's a great topic right now.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, Bruce, tell our listeners a little bit about StockCharts, because one of my favorite pages on your website is your market summary. I can, in one page, go through all the markets in the world, the major indices, the different sectors of the S&P, international commodities, currencies, cryptos, market statistics, volatility, things like that, all in one page. It's my go-to page in the morning, because on one page, I can get a sense of everything happening around the markets around the globe.
Couldn't agree more. I do the exact same thing, and StockCharts.com is just a great site for people that want to chart financial data. And most everything you can imagine that you could possibly want to chart, you can create. Much of StockCharts is free. There's like a lot of free charts that you can construct. You can see quotes on the market. And then there are subscription packages which allow you more features. But it's just a fabulous place for anybody that likes to chart. And I do all the charts I do for publication purposes, I do right there. And it's just a great place. It's a great home.
All right. That website is StockCharts.com. All one word, StockCharts. Bruce, thanks so much for joining us on the program. It's a pleasure speaking with you. Stay warm where you're at, and hopefully spring is on its way.
This is sort of a shot across the bow. The markets have sort of sat up and looked at what's going on. And then I think that there'll be some calming down, but it is a sign of the fact that you do have stresses in the financial system, and the financial system has not really been tested since 2008, 2009. And there are probably some weaknesses in it that have built up over the last 15 years. This really put the spook into a lot of people. And when people get scared, they run into gold and silver. But it also ties in with something that we've really been talking about since January. If you look at 9 asset classes and you compare them to gold and silver, the top performer from the start of 2022 to 2023 was T-bills at 4.4% increase. Silver was at 3%. Gold was basically flat. And then everything else, all the stocks and bonds and real estate, were negative 11 to negative 22%. And what you saw was institutional investors and mainstream investors, retail investors, family offices saying, wow, if I had had some money in gold and silver last year, I would have done much better than I did.
To listen to this full interview, in addition to gaining access to all of our premium content airing during the week, go to financialsense.com and hit the subscribe button.
Hi, I'm Jim Poplava. I started Financial Sense in 1985 to give clients a boutique, personal investment experience that's hard to get at a large company. For 3 decades, my company has been helping families build, manage, and protect their wealth through tailored financial planning and investment management. If you are looking to make financial sense of a complex world, give our office a call at 888-486-3939 to speak with one of our advisors today, and let us help you plan your future. Joining us on the program is Danielle DiMartino Booth from Quill Research. Danielle, let's talk about, finally, something breaks.
Well, it looks like something has broken, but by the same token, it looks like they've put Humpty Dumpty back together pretty quickly, which is fairly astonishing given this is the second largest bank failure in the history of the United States, followed by another sizable one and preceded by Silvergate Capital folding. So you would think that 3 events in the space of 7 days might be deemed as systemic, but that's certainly not what we've seen at all. In fact, it's quite incredible to sit back and reflect on the last 8 days and how orderly things are right now, despite the fact that we're a week away from another Fed rate hike.
You know, it was interesting because up until these events, the markets were pricing in the probability of 50 basis points. Now it's kind of like 50-50 on a quarter. And how quickly things change. And it's hard to believe, Danielle. I mean, we were buying treasuries over 5% a week ago. Now they're down in the 4% range. That's how dramatically things have shifted in just, what, 8 days?
You know, they have. And I think that we would be paying a little bit more attention to the magnitude of the reversal, if you will, in terms of the reversal in Tuesday's trading, had it not been for the 98.8th percentile move in 3 days that we saw in the yield curve. I mean, it's truly extraordinary. You would think that, you know, not that you can ever do these things, but if you can go back in time and net out the last 8 days of drama, you know, how the market would be reacting right now to core inflation having ticked up and been above what the Fed was expecting, what the market was expecting, and, you know, the potential bloodbath we would be seeing in the markets right now.
What's rather interesting on this is the Fed came up with a kind of a rescue program. So let's say you have $1 billion worth of treasuries. And because of you bought them when interest rates were lower, let's say those treasuries are now worth maybe $700 million. So the Fed has this program for 1 year. They take your treasuries that used to be worth $1 billion that are worth $700 million, and they give you $1 billion for liquidity, for cash. And then in a year, you get those treasuries back. How's this going to work if things don't change in a year?
Well, the Fed can do what it wants to do in terms of extending out a timeline. We learned that with not QE, when the overnight facility became a 30-day facility, became a 90-day facility. The Fed just kept extending out the term. And that's certainly something that the Fed could do. And if you'll indulge me, there's a separate parallel. And that is that after the pandemic hit and the Fed verbally said, we will backstop the high yield market by buying bonds if need be, they really didn't have to do anything. All they had to do was make the announcement, and that was enough to calm the markets down. We're seeing a parallel of that today.
Yeah, because certainly things have calmed down. We've got a nice rally on the day you and I are speaking, which is a Tuesday. But, you know, I was reading, Danielle, I think overall banks are sitting on over $600 billion in losses on their treasury securities. So, you know, that's a big number.
There's absolutely no doubt about it. And in no way, shape, or form am I trying to suggest that whatever this is over. There's a debt ceiling that is barreling toward us. And the situation with banks sitting on these unrealized losses is going to become untenable, especially for the smallest community banks, which is a tragedy in and of itself. Once the debt ceiling is resolved and Treasury Secretary Yellen is then prompted to go out and sell a lot of treasury bills, 700, 800 billion in treasuries in order to refill the nation's checking account. Jim, I think that that's going to be more of the heart attack moment, if you will, and that's going to come later this summer towards into the fall. Again, the difference between what these banks hold in terms of coupon and what will be being issued in the market in the very shortest of tenures, given it looks like the Fed is going to maintain tight policy, I think that that's going to be the real test for the banking system.
You know, I was reading, I think there's about $3 trillion of treasury debt that's rolling over this year. And then I think they need to refinance somewhere in that neighborhood, close to $3 trillion. That's a lot of money that they're going to have to refinance. And then on top of that, Danielle, you think about most people when interest rates were down, you refinanced your house. So you locked in that 3% mortgage, your car loans, etc. But the Treasury, on the other hand, was skating through this with short-term debt, which they were paying next to nothing. As this debt rolls over, and I think we're somewhere like close to $31.7 trillion in debt, we'll be over 32 by the end of the year with bigger deficits. What is this going to do to the deficits when the government starts paying 4% or 4.5%? Who knows what that number is going to be, but it's certainly not going to be 10 basis points or a half a basis point or 50 basis points as we were on 10-year treasuries over a year ago.
You make a very, very good point. And again, Jim, I think I'm not trying to be redundant, but this takes us to the debt ceiling talks. So the supposition prior to Silicon Valley Bank blowing up, the supposition that there was plenty of appetite and capacity in the system to handle $37 trillion of U.S. Treasury debt, I think that supposition has been questioned. And I think that there is going to be the greater chance going forward for there to be entitlement discussions about reducing the size of the deficit because of this cardiac arrest moment for the market. Let me tell you, these are dots that I've connected that I sense that few inside the Beltway have begun to even ponder.
Yeah, because I think, what is it? Social Security and Medicare is over 60% of the government's budget. Then you add now interest on the debt, which is going to be going up. Then you add the military and then the rest of running the government. You're talking about multiple trillion-dollar deficits in the years ahead.
You know, that's exactly right. And to your point, even if the Fed is only successful in holding interest rates at these high levels, let's call it for 9 more months, that's really, it's going to be an interest service expense shock to the nation. And by the way, I'm of the view that the United States is in recession. It's going to really tie Congress's hands in terms of the ability to be nimble and inject large amounts of fiscal stimulus into the economy if so much more of the budget is being consumed by servicing the nation's debt.
You know, I heard a statistic that really struck me. It took 250 years in presidents from George Washington to George Bush to get $9.5 trillion in debt. We just added $9.5 trillion in the last 3 years. I mean, that really puts this in perspective. And to that point, Danielle, what do? We just increased spending by a supplemental spending. I think it's $7.5 trillion. Typically, when you go into a recession, and next year is a presidential election year, Congress will come up with some kind of stimulus to get the economy going again. When you've spent this kind of money, what are they going to do with the debt ceiling debate, higher interest rates, and we're in a recession?
Very, very little. And I think that that could well be the goal, maybe if it's an unstated goal, but nevertheless, the goal here, because this will force the discussion on many levels that I think most in Washington, and I would even say most on both sides of the aisle, would prefer to continue delaying indefinitely. But there are going to be real ramifications. People ask me all the time, okay, even if it's very dramatic, Danielle, even if it goes deep into the fall, the debt ceiling will eventually be resolved. And then both parties are going to wake up and say, oh my gosh, we're in recession. We better pump some kind of stimulus into the economy before the election hits us come November of 2024. So you can certainly fathom the possibility that there might be emergency measures undertaken, or at least endeavored to be undertaken within 12 months of the election. But again, we've got a lot of hurdles to get past between now and then. And by then, it might simply be too late.
And what if the rate of inflation doesn't recede like the Fed is hoping it will? And we're dealing with, let's say, higher energy prices by the end of the year, and inflation is still stubbornly high.
Well, I think that that is more of your outlier type of scenario, given the layoff announcements that continue to arrive. Tyson Chicken, my gosh, a year ago, we were talking about the fact that we couldn't get our hands on chicken and that places that served wings had changed to thighs. Tyson Chicken just announced it's going to be closing 2 plants here by early May, laying off 1,700 people. We've got another 15,000 positions that have disappeared at Meta. The white collar recession is very much underway. And there's absolutely no denying that the top quintile, top 20% of U.S. earners are responsible for more than 40% of consumption. And of course, 70% of U.S. GDP is consumption. My point is, it's going to be very difficult to get blood out of a rock and to secure pricing power in this environment. If households are having to spend more on gasoline, then they're just going to be forced in a falling wage environment. Then they'll just be forced to have to spend less on discretionary goods, which will tame inflation overall.
So let's talk about two scenarios that are sort of themes that Wall Street had. Last year, when we had 2 negative quarters of GDP growth, it was a hard landing. As things were not as bad as they thought, it became a soft landing. Then we had some better economic numbers on employment. It became a no landing. So no landing was the theory. Then the other one was the Fed pivot. Well, they'll pivot. Well, what if they don't pivot and they just pause? What's your take on those two scenarios?
Well, I think that the most likely scenario right now, well, A, I thought the no landing camp was being silly. You know, you've got auto delinquencies even meandering up towards prime borrowers, you know, at the highest level since 2019 for prime borrowers or subprime borrowers all the way back to 2009. You've got, you know, 51 bankruptcies in the 3 months ended February 28th. You know, the last time you saw that was also during the great financial crisis. So I found it to be very disingenuous and specious to suggest that there was going to be no landing as the layoff cycle really did get up and running. Beyond that, I think that to the point of what Chair Powell has maintained, and by the way, quashed a systemic potential risk alongside the intention to continue raising interest rates, he's done something that could never be done in the last few days. If that's the case, and he does not even pause, and as the market has now priced in, pushes forward with a quarter percentage point hike on March the 22nd at the FOMC and says 6% inflation is still triple our target, we're going to wait and see and continue to be data dependent, especially because this upheaval in the banking sector appears to have been quashed by our quick maneuvers. This is, again, not what markets are expecting. And because of what's happened with the regional banks, credit's going to continue to get more difficult to access, even as the Fed, in my view, continues to maintain a tighter stance than what the markets are anticipating.
So given this market, one thing that has struck me for the first time in almost two decades, we have at least something where you can hide in treasury bills. I mean, when was the last time you saw 5% treasury bills? And so, so much for TINA. So there is an alternative to stocks right now. What would you be doing in this kind of environment, given the various scenarios we just discussed?
Well, I think I should be embracing with both arms the beauty of compound interest. I think that was the easiest question I've had in a while.
Well, I tell you, it is kind of nice if you're looking for a place to hide where you can get, I mean, it's hard to believe, a little over a week ago, you were getting over 5%, 5.25% on treasuries. And given what we're seeing in the banking system, that's not a bad place to be.
No, it's not. It certainly is not. And banks are, they were competitive in trying to garner deposits last week, and it's deposits that they seek. They know that the deposits are even more slippery and apt to move this week now that there is an even a broader understanding in the general public of some of the different ways that they can make 5.25% on their money with an 18-month CD. Before you had the first quote-unquote run on the bank, I think that a lot of your average working Americans, I had my medical doctor, my internist reach out to me on Friday afternoon asking me where she should put her money. So I think that the heightened awareness is going to continue to see money moving about.
All right. Well, listen, Danielle, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow your work at Quill Research, tell them how they can do so.
So the best way in order to do that is to come to demartinobooth.substack.com. We sure have enjoyed moving to this new platform. And if you don't already follow me on Twitter, follow me at demartinobooth. And I look forward to the back and forth.
All right. Well, Danielle, thanks so much for joining us on the program. All the best and come back again.
Likewise. Thank you.
That concludes our weekend edition of the Financial Sense NewsHour. To speak with our financial planning and wealth management team, give us a call at 888-486-3939 or go to financialsense.com and click where it says Contact Us. If you aren't already a subscriber to our weekday podcast and would like to listen to more of our content, where we regularly interview book authors, industry experts, and strategists from around the globe, go to Financial Sense and hit the subscribe button. On behalf of Financial Sense NewsHour and the Financial Sense Wealth Management team, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.